Yes, but Martin, God has to do something about sin. What about sin? You have to deal with sin. How can everybody be saved? You say everybody's going to be saved, but people are sinners. God has to deal with sin. Sin, sin. Don't you know it's all about sin? There's a city for sin. There's a people who specialize in sin. And ironically, it's Christians. Christians love sin. They love to still make sin the barrier between God and humanity, when in fact, God did something about it. Everybody, this is Martin Zender. God did something about sin. Don't know if any of you Christians out there got the news flash. A friend of mine, her dad, thinks that sin is going to still keep billions of people from God for eternity. Sin is going to do that. Sin. I asked him, what did Jesus Christ come to do? Well, he came to take away the sin of the world. Yes. Oh, he came to take away the sin of the world. Yeah. I wonder if it worked. What? I wonder if it worked, sir. I wonder if it worked. God came to take away the sin of the world. I wonder if it worked. Yeah, it worked. We could talk about eternal torment if the Son of God had not come to take away the sin of the world. John 1:29. I am audacious enough to believe he succeeded. And in the book of Hebrews, we have a simple phrase. And this guy said, by the way, you know, he still insisted that every man, he still insisted that millions and billions of people are going to go to hell for eternity. What can we say about the efficiency of the sacrifice of Christ when the only sin you really go to hell for is not believing in Jesus Christ, right? If you believe in Jesus Christ, nothing else matters, correct? If you believe in Jesus Christ, you can be a glutton, you can be a boaster, you can be proud, you can be envious, you can be a whoremonger, you can be a prostitute, you can be a reviler, a drunkard, an extortioner. But if you believe in Jesus, well, you can put the Christian bumper sticker on your car, be patient with me, God isn't finished with me yet. I know I usually hate them, but it's the only bumper sticker I ever saw coming out of Christianity that I liked. Be patient, God isn't finished with me yet. So he died for all these sins. Yeah, he died for gluttony, for prostitution, all this. But those sins won't send you to hell for eternity if you're a believer. So the one sin that damns you is unbelief. So instead of dying for these 490 inconsequential sins such as gluttony and pride, why didn't God die for the sin that's going to send everybody to hell for eternity? Why didn't he die for unbelief? Then he only had to die for one sin, leave the others undone, and everybody goes to heaven for eternity. Unless he's trying on purpose to screw everybody up. There's 490 ways to screw it up. But the essential sin remains unbelief. You're going to go to hell for that sin. I don't know why I'm talking like Woody Allen. I have no idea. I don't understand it myself. I just break into it. How inefficient of the Son to die for every sin except the one that's going to send you to hell for eternity. So this guy I talked to apparently has no problem with that. Again, in spite of the fact that something was done about it. If something hadn't been done about it, even I, Martin Zender, would entertain the thought of eternal torment, or at least annihilation. Probably couldn't go to the eternal torment, but you could probably talk to me about annihilation, that once you die, you're dead, there's no resurrection. But since Christ came to put away sin, and he took the sins of the world on himself, then what's now standing in the way? And we have this simple phrase in Hebrews, namely this, verse 3. Christ, who, being the effulgence of his glory, God's glory, and the emblem of his assumption, God's assumption, I told you about that before, explained that to you, besides carrying on all by his powerful declaration, making a cleansing of sins, is seated at the right hand of God. I love how God just passes over this, making a cleansing of sins. He just passes over that. Making a cleansing of sin. It's like in the beginning of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, but the earth became a chaos. He created the heavens and the earth. One second. Is it one verse, one moment? I mean, if I had created the heavens and the earth, I would have elaborated on it. I would have, like, chapter one, Martin Zender sat in his chair, contemplating the exact manner in which he would create the first star. He rubbed his creative mitts together, licked his index finger, put on a cerebral show, the likes of which no one had ever seen, and by the power of his will, slowly, yet very, very concisely, and with great power, power and purpose, brought the first star, and I would have elaborated and bragged about it. God, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The heavens and the earth became a chaos and vacant, and then the God, it's like a footnote. That's how easy it is for him. So cleansing of sin, it goes right over it. And people pass over it. And the angel Gabriel said to Joseph, the Son of God would be taking this Israel's sins away. I gave you that verse a couple weeks ago. Matthew 1:21 or something. Yeah, indeed, it's Matthew 1:21. Now she, Mary, shall be bringing forth a son, and you shall be calling his name Jesus, for he shall be saving, Jesus means Savior, his people from their sins. And Paul confirms the truth that the sins are going to be removed from Israel. And Romans 11, thus all Israel shall be saved according as it is written, arising out of Zion shall be the rescuer, and on that goes. So a cleansing of sin. I love how he says that, like it's no big deal. But it was a huge deal. Great energy coming from Christ. The blood of Christ speaks of his suffering. The blood of Christ didn't save us. It was a liquid. Represented the soul. The soul was in the blood, not the life. Life's in the spirit. The soul's in the blood. That is the feeling, the pain. He suffered for our sakes to show us how much he loved us. His blood bought our deliverance. His suffering, what he did for us. Not what his blood did, what he, Jesus Christ, who loves us, did for us. He has emotional attachment. It's an emotion, very complex emotion, love is. And his emotion, He saw us. He loved us even while he was on the cross. He knew he was suffering for those yet unborn, for us. So this tells me that the entrance of sin in the universe, the presence of sin in the universe, is all taken into account. It's accounted for by this one phrase, cleansing of sin. It came in order to leave. Sin came in order to leave. It has a short time on the stage. I know it seems like a long time. This thing's protracted, if you ask me, but it's not going to go on a minute longer than it has to. He's made a cleansing of sin. So this makes it clear that in the grand scheme of things, sin is considered only a temporary stain in the whole grand scheme. It's just a little blot. It's temporary, but essential to an understanding of salvation. You got to know sin in order to appreciate salvation. It's simple. Contrast. Again, contrast, contrast, contrast. Just one simple phrase in Hebrews. I wanted to bring that up to you. I hate to go on to chapter 2 without bringing that up. Then we got this amazing statement. I love these practical statements in the scriptures. And one of the most practical ones I find in Hebrews, it's in Hebrews 1, 3. Well, I'm going to start with verse 1 to get into the flow here. By many portions and many modes of old, God, speaking to the fathers and the prophets, in the last of these days, speaks to us in a Son, whom he appoints enjoyer of the allotment of all, through whom he also makes the eons. End of verse 2. Through whom, Jesus Christ, God also makes the eons. God didn't make the eons. He made them through Jesus Christ. This agrees with 1 Corinthians 8:6. All is out of God, but all is through Christ. Christ is the channel through which everything comes into existence. And the first thing I believe Jesus Christ created were the eons, the times, because otherwise God doesn't have a framework on which to reveal himself. We only understand things through time. God made us that way. We're limited. We're fragile. Your minds would explode if God asked you to understand eternity. I told you, I used to tell my kids God had neither beginning or end. And they were like 3 and 6 years old at this time. And that drove them crazy. God had no beginning or end. We don't understand that. And they used to jump down on the bed in total frustration, holding their heads, pulling their hair, and screaming. It's like, well, how could he not have a beginning? And I said, calm down. You can't understand it. We're not supposed to understand eternity. So God, in his mercy, within eternity, which he understands, I don't even understand within eternity, that saying itself probably doesn't make sense, but within eternity, I'm going to say it anyway, he made the eons, he made a framework of time. Now he has something sticky on which to hang his revelation. The eons are sticky. You can do stuff during the eons. You can do something on day one. You can do something on day two. You can have process. You can come to a realization of the truth. None of these things are possible. You can't come to a realization of something. You can't learn something, because these speak of processes, unless you have something sticky to hang it on. And that sticky thing is time. We take time for granted, but time was created. The eons specifically. The eons were created as a framework, as a template, as a canvas upon which God paints his masterpiece. They're called the Aeonian times. And now that God has a calendar, now he can start to do stuff. You see, you can't even say do stuff unless you're speaking of time. Things aren't done in eternity. And even when we're snatched away, we're not going to be in eternity. We're not. We're going to be at the beginning of Eon 4. Doesn't sound like eternity to me. Oh, we're saved. We've entered into eternity. No, you've entered into Eon 4. Sorry to burst your spiritual bubble there, but I actually enjoyed it. I didn't mind it at all, bursting your spiritual bubble. Well, it's not a spiritual bubble anyway. Spiritual bubbles concern truth. And the truth is that we are moving through a framework of time. Now, I get this argument all the time, but Martin, God's eternal. We're supposed to think eternally because God's eternal. No, we're not. God is also unlocatable. He is everywhere. We can't grasp that. So he creates Christ because Christ can be GPS'd. Christ is located somewhere. All these things are to help us feeble people because we are purposely subjected to time. And even when we are changed, when our bodies are made glorious, we're still going to be subjected to time. But I don't know about you, but I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy the time of my resurrection. Those 1,000 years, you know, the first 1,000 years of our glory. You remember when you were a kid and that weekend couldn't be long enough? You just wanted the time to stretch out. You want it to last forever, but it never did. It always came to an end. Imagine being in glory and just luxuriating, and every minute is pure pleasure, and you realize that was only the first minute. Oh my gosh, that was only the first minute. I got another 1,000 years of this, and then that's just like the Saturday. This is like the beginning of the week. No, that's like Friday night, and then you have Saturday to look forward to, which is, well, actually, that would be Saturday. I got to say, yeah, the 1,000 years would be Saturday because that's the true Sabbath. That's the Sabbath, quote, day, unquote, God's working toward the 1,000 years of stopping, commonly referred to as rest in the King James Version. So I would probably have to call the New Heavens and the New Earth, Eon 5, that follows Eon 4, probably have to call that Sunday. That would be the beginning of the week. Why not? And that eon goes for more than 1,000 years, thousands and thousands of years probably. What happens after that? I don't know. The Aeonian times come to an end. Does that mean time comes to an end? I used to think so, but I don't think so anymore. I just think the Aeonian times come to an end. Maybe more times are going to start then, but they won't be called eons. What are they going to be called? I don't know. They're going to be called flugels or something. I don't know. The flugel times, the hippity hops. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever you want to call them. I don't know what happens at the consummation of the eons. All I know is that I'm going to enjoy every single minute of it. And I'm going to thank Jesus Christ who created these eons so that we could in progress, so that we could make steady progress, so that we could go from glory to glory, so that we can see things unfold and appreciate more and more the heart of God. That would be impossible apart from the Aeonian times, and the Aeonian times would have been impossible, were impossible without Jesus Christ creating the eons. Hebrews 1:2.